fighting for America.
Muhammad shows up in a place like Tampico, Mexico, and for $1,500, he gets Mexican identity documents. And so Muhammad becomes Manuel.
Fighting for Idaho.
People think Netanyahu is like Ronald Reagan or Ted Cruz. As far as Israeli politics go, he is not the Ronald Reagan or Ted Cruz of Israeli politics. He's more like the Jeb Bush.
Fighting for you.
Hopefully the younger generation is paying attention and wake up and don't vote for a political party. Vote for the person and what they really, really, really are.
Boise's Mr. Right.
I think she's a new addition to the Miller Militia.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning, at Kevin Miller Show on Twitter and Facebook and everything else. Joining us now, our friend Mike Tracy. Talk about the state of the political realm, not only in Idaho, but the country. Mike, good to have you with us.
Hey, good to be here, Kevin. I always enjoy it.
You know, there's a lot of talk going on concerning the Boulder white clouds and what is next for this area. Senator Risch, Congressman Simpson, it's almost like his journey, his crusade to make this happen before the feds take it over. You and Senator Craig know all about this issue, have worked tirelessly on this issue. What do you think is going to happen with Boulder White Clouds? Will it be the feds or the state that get it?
Well, we're already hearing rumblings that the environmental community is not happy with the Mike Simpson version, and I think they're going to fight that. Here they're going to be handed a wilderness designation, and they don't want it because it's just not enough. And what that is, to me, is really one more example of what I've seen over the last 30 years of working with the environmental community on natural resource issues. They constantly are pushing to the center and to the left, and they're never happy with what they get. They get what they get, and then they want more. And it, you know, if you're a conservative, if you're trying to maintain utilization of natural resources, they're always pushing. And what's really interesting is what's never addressed with wilderness is what about folks that are disabled and what about seniors who can't get into wilderness areas? And it's talked about every once in a while here and there, but it's almost a silent on the issue. Big chunks of the U.S. population don't have access to wilderness because they need motorized vehicles or some kind of motorized assistance to get in there, and you cannot use motorized anything to get into a wilderness area. And that's a problem. The National Monument, states should have the right to veto the National Monument. What happened at Escalante in Utah under Clinton was, you know, criminal to what they did, and the so-called tourism that it generates is nothing compared to what they could have done if they would have had decision-making power in Utah to do what they would like around that area. And the same is true with the Boulder White Clouds. I know Mike Simpson has worked hard on it for years, and it's one of those areas where most of the delegation and most people in Idaho don't want more wilderness. I mean, we did tremendous research up in Lemhi and Custer County, and 82% of the people up there in those two counties strongly disagreed with having more wilderness. They just didn't want more. And, you know, there's a lot of other research that says, yes, Idahoans want a lot more wilderness. No, they really don't. We've got enough. And 64% of Idaho is federal land. Another 5% is state land. And, another percent or so is city and counties. 70% of Idaho is owned by the government. And only 30% is left for private use. We don't need any more wilderness designations or any special designations. We got plenty.
You've been at these high-level meetings, though. The president, again, can be lobbied when he came to town. Mayor Beter was saying, hey, let's federalize it. Lieutenant Governor Brad Little sticking up saying, don't do that, don't do that. How influential will these environmental people be? And from an ego perspective, if I'm President Obama, all of a sudden, now I officially own forever and ever a part of Idaho.
Well, a designation like that could be undone by future presidents. That is something, as far as I know, that a future president could come in and alter those kinds of things. And Congress could also alter the Antiquity Act. you know, that helps helps create the national monument. So there's things that can be done. It's not in perpetuity. It's not a designation that you know, that can't be undone. But with, as with all things with the federal government, once something's created, it's almost impossible to get rid of it. And when you talk about high level meetings, the thing that I got most frustrated about in my time in the U.S. Senate was, you know, how lethargic and how large and how unresponsive federal agencies and the federal government is to anyone and everything. And the only way you could get help sometimes was through our office or offices like ours, where a U.S. senator would make a phone call to an agency, because they ignored many, many times. They would just ignore the average citizen.
Economically, is there a difference if the state has it or the feds take it?
Well, if the state owned it outright or had significant management capabilities, they would be operated much different. State lands are the endowment lands, which state lands are primarily, are used to raise funds for education. And the resources, we have access to them. They're not managed as wilderness. A lot of most federal land, if it's not designated wilderness in Idaho, is managed as de facto wilderness. In other words, the federal agencies that manage BLM and Forest Service primarily manage these lands, even if they're not designated as wilderness or monument or whatever, they're managed as de facto wilderness areas. In other words, you can't do anything on these areas even though there's not a designation. And that's been going on for decades in Idaho and in other states that have a lot of public land, federal public land. If it was in the state's hands, it would be managed. And the economic benefit would be significantly different.
Mike Tracy with us, Tracy Consulting, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. Let's talk about a very special anniversary that you wanted to bring up here on the program. When we're talking about a movement, a campaign that changed the course of history on the Idaho Supreme Court.
It did. 15 years ago, right about now, we started a campaign with Supreme Court Justice Dan Eisman, who was a district judge in the Treasure Valley at the time, a very conservative man, very good man, very honorable individual, served in Vietnam in combat zone honorably, was wounded in battle, just a great individual. And then we had a pretty liberal judge appointed by Governor Cecil Andrus, who had made a decision on a water decision that the people in Idaho didn't like very much. When you start messing with water,
sure,
you have some real problems. And it was to actually create a federal water right, and that is a no-no in the state of Idaho. And so we put Dan Eisman's campaign forward, and I was part of that, and we were very successful. We not only won the election, and it was the first time in 56 years, you had to go back to World War II, 1944, the last time an incumbent was knocked out in an election, 56 years. But Dan Eisman replaced her 59-41%, and he eventually became the Chief Justice of the Idaho Supreme Court. So we were very happy to work on that campaign. It was one of the most exciting and one of the most rewarding campaigns of my life.
Speaking of Governor Andrus, are you surprised that Governor Andrus, former Governor Andrus, former Governor Batt are threatening to sue the feds, threatening to sue the state over the INL situation?
No, I'm not surprised at all. Cecil used to grandstand dramatically at the state border. He would stand at the state border. He was one of the greatest grandstanders of all time. You know, he used the media. That was back in the day when there weren't alternative ways to get your media message out.
Right.
And there were, you know, and he had control of three of the media outlets in the state of Idaho. And so nobody really knew what was going on. He was one of those people that was kind of like Frank Underwood, man. He would squash his competition. And,
wait a minute. Cecil Andrus, Frank Underwood in a way?
Oh, I don't think – I'm not going to say that he did some of the dastardly things, but he was definitely a conniver, and that's a nice way to put it. The fact that Phil Batt's involved is not a surprise either, because Phil cut the deal in 1995 – with the INL, with the feds, to get the nuclear waste out. And it should have been, everything should have been out of there by now. They said the website at Carlsbad was never going to be open for the low-level nuclear waste in the mid-90s. My old boss, Larry Craig, helped get it open in 99, and I actually stood in the Idaho room in May of 1997 before they started shipping, and then they did start shipping. I think it was in 99. We could have the high-level stuff out, too. I went through Yucca Mountain with the head of the U.S. Geological Survey in May of 1997. That site is very stable. It's perfect for the waste, and for Nevada to try to claim that they're a non-nuclear zone is a joke. They've got 18 million tons of nuclear waste material in the form of soil already buried there permanently, along with all the other nuclear stuff that they've had going on. They used to do above ground tests there for decades, and they did below ground tests. It's a joke to try to claim that Nevada is a nuclear-free zone. Even the professors and the scientists in Nevada that rely on the largesse of Harry Reid laugh at that when Harry Reid says it, because it is truly a joke. We could have all of that out of there, but Harry Reid's been playing games for decades. That nuclear waste should have been out of there. I'm not surprised that the governors did that. I don't know what they hope to accomplish and saying that they're going to going to do that. But bottom line is that there's always going to be that push and pull when it comes to nuclear waste, especially the high-level stuff. That's the stuff that really, people want to get rid of and have permanent storage. One of the things that's interesting, Kevin, is we literally had international nuclear people come in and look at our sites, and people in France and other places that have a lot of nuclear power said, wow, we wish we had your facilities. You should see where we have to store ours for long-term storage. And those countries they said, well, we would love to have your facilities if you don't want them.
Right, and you talk about France. They have a lot more nuclear power than we do. Most of their country is nukes.
The number I saw back in the 90s was roughly 85% of their country their electricity was generated from nuclear. And other countries, countries that you would consider liberal, embrace nuclear because it's really the only way without belching, a lot of, coal. Materials which people don't like, burning coal or other kinds of things, they look at that as a really clean alternative for themselves. I happen to think that you can produce good, clean energy using almost all of the resources these days, and a good mix of electric production is, in my opinion, is what's really beneficial. And we're very fortunate in Idaho to have a tremendous amount of hydroelectric production, and people do forget about that. And that's one of the reasons our electricity costs are as low as they are and why it's a good state to live in.
More coming up with our friend Mike Tracy next. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning, Mike Tracy with us, Tracy Consulting. As we move along, Mike, I've got a question for you. You mentioned Frank Underwood, Game of Thrones. Now, are you caught up? Have you seen season 3?
Well, I think you're referring to House of Cards rather than Game of Thrones.
And
I watch both, Kevin.
Right. House of Thrones, yes.
House of Thrones. And I can't, the Lego folks did something as well, and I can't remember what they called it, but House of Cards is an interesting thing. I've watched it now, and I am watching the third season.
So you haven't been through the entire third season yet?
No. But we're a couple of three. My wife and I have really enjoyed it. We got hooked on it immediately.
Sure.
And
my
wife asked me, is that what it's really like back there? And I said, yeah, except I'm not sure that these guys are killing each other and killing other people so readily. But
sure,
a lot of the other stuff that happens, the skullduggery that happens behind the scenes,
right,
there's a lot of people who will do anything to gain power. But I was very fortunate. We've got a delegation here that operates in a very fundamental, a very sound way, in a very ethical way. And, working for Senator Craig and knowing the rest of the delegation as well as I do and their staffs, We're very fortunate here. We don't have Frank Underwoods here. And when I mentioned Cecil Anders, I was teasing halfway because...
No, I'm with you. The point I guess I was trying to make is, you know, Mike, you're a moral guy. You speak of morality. We do that here in Idaho at 580KIDO. And I think that the point I was going to make is whether it's Game of Thrones, and that's what I get for multitasking. I'm tweeting and blogging while we're doing this interview. So let me focus now on a real important issue. But whether it's Game of Thrones, whether it's House of Cards, I mean, the immoral behavior that's going on now, and we've seen that play out with other issues here in the Gem State as well, where you have people wanting this, that, and the other. I mean, again, the Republicans are bad. Men don't sleep with other women besides their wives. They sleep with other men now. And you wonder the impact that has on people today. Republicans are bad, and everything else is good, and you should question. You know, your thoughts reacting to that. I mean, it's great theater, but then on the other hand, you're going, well, come on, this isn't true.
Well, I think, you know, entertainment and television and film is just that. It's entertainment. It's meant to pique our interest. As far as real life, I think, you know, there's disappointments and people who have disappointed in the state of Idaho. Don't get me wrong. I was raised in Joliet, Illinois till I was 15 and moved to Paul, Idaho when I was 15 years old in 1970. So I'm dating myself. Mm-hmm. People don't know how difficult and challenging it is in those areas unless they live there. We have a tremendous state in terms of operating in an honest fashion. I grew up around places where, you know, just staying alive day to day in Joliet was the concern. Our school was burned to the ground during the 68 riots. Sacred Heart grade school was burned to the ground that summer between my 7th and 8th grade year. That's when my dad decided we're moving somewhere where there's no people, and he picked Idaho, Paul, Idaho, to be specific. And I think, you know, we have our problems, and we have bad players or people who make mistakes or do things that, you know, stretch the envelope. But I guarantee you we have nothing in Idaho compared to what I've seen in other places and the corruption that I see. And it's Chicago is one of the worst places I've ever been in the United States in terms of corruption.
I'm with you, but it's just the cultural impact that we have to fight day in and day out through popular culture. Let's go to our congressional delegation. How if you had to rank them, how strong are they? And see, this is what I love because I can get so inside baseball with you here at 580KIDO. So I have a couple inside questions, but when you take a look at Senator Risch, Senator Craper, we'll talk with the senators there about the senators right now. How would you rate them when we're talking about, you know, all of the senators in the United States and Senate? How influential are our folks? And remember, Senator Craig, I mean, he was the man, still is the man, but I mean, we got a lot of things because of him.
Well, you had a real great partnership in appropriations when Senator Craig was here, because you had a U.S. senator who was on the Appropriation Committee, and then you had Mike Simpson, who was on the House Appropriation Committee. And in a state with only four members in the delegation, two of our four were on appropriate. So we had both sides of the rotunda taken care of in Congress.
Outkick the coverage.
And we really... really had a lot of power with when it came to that. But I have to say that Mike Crapo and Jim Risch have positioned themselves well. Jim Risch's committee assignments have been outstanding. Mike's got some seniority. He's been in office since 1993 on the House side. He started on the House side, and he's been in the Senate since 1999. And he's done a great job, and he's surrounded himself with great staff. And that's half the battle, is having great staff around you. And a lot of those people are friends of mine, and I've worked very closely with them. And they are workers. They know their issues. They know how things operate, and they know how to get things done, and that's what good staff work does for a senator. And then you look at the fact that both Mike and Jim are attorneys. They have tremendous legal background. You know, I think in looking at the difference in their personalities, Jim's just more tenacious than Mike Crapo. Mike's more soft spoken, but Jim is Jim being on the Intelligence Committee and on the committees that he's on is just unbelievable where we're at with our delegation on right. the Senate side. I haven't even got to the House side yet.
Let me jump in here for a second here, but Jim Risch voted year after year the most conservative senator in the Senate.
Oh, yeah. At least I think three out of the last 4 years, the National Journal and other measuring entities on Capitol Hill in the Beltway have ranked him as the most conservative senator. And he's only been in office for a little over six years.
So right.
that's very impressive that he is seen as the most conservative man out of the 100. There's only 100 people on the planet that have that job, and he's the number one most conservative guy in that very exclusive club.
Well, and again, like you said, that's the best of the best. So we've broken down the senators. Coming up with Mike Tracy, we'll take a look at our congressman, kind of the tale of two congressmen, and we'll actually hold on in a minute, Mike. We'll get to that in a minute. Mike Tracy is our guest. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. Don't forget, of course, you can always check us out at 580KIDO.com on Twitter or our website for blogs and videos and the like. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Miller Show. Let's get you informed right now at 580KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO, Mike Tracy with us now. Mike's ever the diplomat, so we're going to try and get a little intense here in this segment. Mike, good to have you back.
It is great to be here, Kevin.
So let's talk a little bit about our congressman. Because, you know, again, we're getting ready for the season. We'll start with Mike Simpson and Raul Labrador, two different guys on, you know, quite a contrast. Is that a good thing when we're talking about our first and second congressional district congressmen?
I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you had a bunch of clones in there, what fun would that be? I mean, first of all, you wouldn't have any fun.
Right.
Number two, you wouldn't have any diversity of opinion. You know, and liberals and Democrats probably don't think there's any diversity of opinion anyway. But trust me, there is diversity of opinion. And Mike and Raul have disagreed on things.
Publicly.
Yeah. And in fact, I think, you know, Raul may have surfaced the candidate that ran against Mike in the primary in the last election cycle.
Wow. Our old friend Brian Smith.
He's
still running ads against Mike Simpson.
That's what I heard, whether that's true or not.
So we'll just say allegedly.
I haven't had it confirmed, but I heard lots of discussion about that. And, but be that as it may, Mike put that one to rest by slaughtering Brian in the primary, and Mike also slaughtered the competition and the general. If he had competition this time, it was so insignificant that nobody even knows what the numbers are.
You're smacking Congressman Stallings? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, was it Richard? In fact, let me tell you, Kevin, about Richard. I did Mike Simpson's first campaign in 1997 and 98
right.
In the primary against Mark Stubbs.
Right.
And we had a closer race against Mark Stubbs than we did against Richard Stallings, the incumbent.
Right.
You know, who had incumbency. He wasn't actually in office because he had been defeated early on by Mike Crapo on the House side, or by Dirk Kempthorne when he ran for Senate. And but he had some incumbency, and Mike Simpson beat him handily. So I do know Richard, and I, you know, in fact, some of his staff switched over to help Mike Simpson in the 98 campaign because they said Richard Stallings had become too liberal for them. He was too liberal for Idaho. And by being back in the Beltway, he had gotten too liberal. And that's a big mistake that people make when they get back there. We don't see that happen. Our guys stay in touch, right. Not only personally by coming back here frequently and touching base with people, but their staffs. We have significant staff in place for our delegations in state, and it makes a big difference.
Well, one more comment on Congressman Simpson here with Mike Tracy at 580KIDO. He works behind the scenes. He's very close with the speaker, very high in leadership, but he is kind of like the Underwood that he just does his job. Well, you don't see him a lot on the big shows. He could be, but he chooses not to, and he's always fighting for the INL. He's always fighting for the second CD.
Well, Mike understands, and he, you know, his family understands. He's from Blackfoot. He understands in eastern Idaho and to the state of Idaho how critical the INL is and how critical their scientific mission is to the United States and how critical nuclear power is to the United States, both in national defense and in terms of overall energy production. And we've always had a strong nuclear presence for a long time with the Navy. We were part of the nuclear Navy, and they credit that site with tremendous strides and a new, and you had to go through there. If you were part of the nuclear Navy, you had to go through training at the INL back in the 50s, 60s, when the submarines were being created, the first nuclear submarines. And so Idaho not only has the tradition, but we have the experience and we have the facilities and we have a great location to do it out there on the desert. It's a perfect location. It's sparsely populated. And Mike understands that. The other part of that equation is Mike is what's known as one of the cardinals on the House Appropriations Committee. He chairs one of the 13 subcommittees on the House side. Very powerful. When you chair an appropriations committee, it allows Mike to secure other things for Idaho that he normally couldn't get. We couldn't get for Idaho because there's a lot of other House members of those 435 that are standing in line for things. And Mike Simpson can provide things for other House members. And that gives us a lot of leverage for the things that we need in Idaho.
Let's go to Congressman Labrador. High-profile guy. John Boehner knows who he is. Butch Otter knows who he is. He's had some interesting twists and turns, and this is really inside. He's had Mr. Popke come aboard, caused him quite a lot of problems with the base as his press person. He's voted for the speaker, which some would say is a good move, but his base was angry about that. He endorsed Russ Fulcher before he endorsed Butch Otter. Where does he go?
You know, the thing about Raul is that, you know, I believe that, you know, he's a fairly conservative guy. I'm still scratching my head months later about the press secretary decision. I have no idea, and that's purely internal. But if it works for them, that's a good thing. I'm not going to be critical on that because I don't have access to the inside and what their long-term plans are. What I do know is that Raul continues to surprise people. He surprised people when he first ran and won. He surprised the party in 2010 when he beat Von Ward. Von kind of self-destructed in 2010 by plagiarizing and he made a lot of mistakes. And I think based on what I saw him do with Sean Hannity on March 31st, he should have won, but the plagiarism and all the other things that came down crashing on his head after March 31st during that very short primary season caused his demise.
But he was with Sean Hannity in Salt Lake, I believe.
On March 31st, and Sarah Palin endorsed him. Sean Hannity endorsed him. He had the world by the tail, and you know, his campaign team, specifically a young man who was from Pennsylvania, who
guy
was
from
his
Pittsburgh,
campaign. And, you know, I'm not being critical. He was a young guy, and he didn't know what he was doing. And he was in way over his head in a congressional campaign and didn't have what he needed, didn't have the tools yet, and he didn't know Idaho. You know, people on the East Coast, I've spent enough time back there, people do not know Idaho. They do not know the difference between Idaho, Iowa, and Ohio, let alone the politics of the state. So if they can't pronounce the name right, how can they do anything else right when it comes to how the state operates? So, you know, Raul surprised a lot of people. And once he won that, I was not surprised he beat Walt Minnick because I ran, I didn't run it, but I was the press secretary for Larry Craig in 96, where I went head to head with Walt Minnick for 6 months. And I knew that Raul could beat Walt, and he did.
So, back to our question. He's not a favorite with Boehner, not a favorite with the governor. His base is a little upset. If you were advising the congressman, what would you do? We're not saying he's a bad guy, but this is what people talk about when they're at the coffee shop.
What I would do is, you know, you have opportunities to reinvent yourself. And when you feel like things aren't going your way, The power in the incumbency is very strong. If Raul, it really depends on how what he feels like. You know, that might be what people are talking about, but are all those things enough to get a primary opponent in a conservative Idaho, even if we go back and pull away from the closed primaries and go back to an open primary? Is it going to be enough to knock him out if he wants to stay there as long as he wants to stay? And there's a lot of speculation that he's going to run for governor in 2018 against, you know, and Brad Little has talked about running for governor, you know, and I haven't heard that out of Brad's lips, but I, you know, that's a presumption that's out there. You know, that may happen. Then it comes down to a primary, and, you know, Brad is extremely well liked, and we also saw, you know, in spite of all of the thrashing that Butch took during the last primary, he still won. Not as big as he would have liked to, but you had a very strong conservative base out there that supported Russ. And, you know, one of the things I was told by a good friend who had been in elected office for a long time is when you hold office, you lose friends and accumulate enemies. And that is true in politics, no matter how good a job you do. When the last time Larry ran against Alan Blinken, a guy who was one of the greatest carpetbaggers of all time in politics, even worse than Hillary in New York, Alan moved in specifically to run against Larry Craig. And even Democrats and liberal editorial writers were saying to me, Mike, Alan is not Idaho. In spite of that, Larry got 65.4% of the vote in 2002. Alan got the rest. What that told me is that other 35% was not going to vote for Larry Craig no matter what. And you're never going to get 100% of anything when you run for office or you do something when you're in office. Right now, the United States Senate could not agree that today is Tuesday because overseas it's already Wednesday somewhere.
Or Thursday or Friday. More coming up with Mike Tracy. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Mike Tracy with us, Tracy Consulting. Hey, 2016 is around the corner. You are very close with Governor Huckabee. You've been close to a lot of these folks. How do you see this playing out? Is it Jeb Bush's to lose, or will the grassroots rebel?
Well, that's a tough call. I've seen things happen in these caucuses. In the last caucus cycle, I went to Iowa to see the Iowa caucuses with my own eyes and spent time in Des Moines at a number of caucuses during that day, during caucus day. Because then I knew we were going to do a caucus, our first caucuses here Sure. in Idaho. You know, it really depends on that groundwork that's done in New Hampshire and Iowa and a few other states. And it's really become a crapshoot because everybody's been moving to Super Tuesdays and everybody's moving their primary up. I know the Idaho Senate just moved to create an Idaho presidential primary in March. Away from the caucus, and I think the vote was 23-12. It was carried, introduced by Senator Chuck Winder from Western Ada County, and I'm not sure what where the House side is on that, but I suspect, you know, what we're going to see in 2016 is it could be somebody who we don't know. I mean, look what happened on the Democrat side in 2008. A complete unknown
right.
Knocked off Hillary Clinton. And to say that all the players are in place right now, I think would be a mistake. And I look at Mike Huckabee, and I think Mike would be a great president.
Mm-hmm.
Based on my experience with the man and watching him for years and having him come here and doing an event for us back in 2012, I have tremendous respect for the man, and, you know, he might be too conservative for some and not conservative enough for others, and the Democrats might not, and the liberals might not like him. I just think he's a quality individual. So I see names out there that I've seen. Jeb Bush, you know, I think there's probably a lot of Bush and Clinton exhaustion and just fatigue with, you know, whether or not Jeb Bush could be successful. I don't know if I just sometimes feel like he would be a placeholder compared, the same as Hillary Clinton. I think they'd be placeholders and we'd have a lot of status quo. I think people want to see some change. We were promised change by the current president. The only thing we got was a change farther to the left. I think people in the United States would like to see a strong military again and a strong presence around the world. I think we're perceived as extremely weak. Mm-hmm. I think we're perceived as extremely vulnerable. I think Putin and the Middle East and China all look at us just, and they're licking their chops and salivating with the weakness that we project. And that's why the United States Senate recently sent a letter to Iran and said, if you think that this presidential deal that you're cutting can't be undone, think again. All treaties, according to the U.S. Constitution, go through us. And if you think your reading of our U.S. Constitution is better than what we know, you're reading it incorrectly. The president is not the all-powerful king. That's what our constitutional authors did not want to happen. They did not want a King George, and this president acts like a king rather than a president.
Mike Tracy, Tracy Consulting, we always appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Fox News is next. Stay here, stay informed. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.